Many of you know kind of my background. I was pretty much raised here until about the sixth grade. Then my mom moved to Dallas, married a Henderson, so don't hold that against her. But moved to Dallas and went to school there. I'm struggling with allergies, I'll just tell y'all, so bear with me this afternoon. Moved to Dallas, really big culture shock. I went from a class of 10, being the only guy in the class, and then I went to a class of 750 kids. So that was a big difference for me, and a lot of different things that I saw that really made me think about this topic, and hopefully my experiences will help some of you in some way. I know it's kind of geared toward the younger people, but it can go for all of us in all aspects of our life. So to open this morning, we're going to open 1 John chapter 2, starting in verse 15. It says, "Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, and the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world passeth away, and the lust thereof. But he that doeth the will of God abideth forever." So today we're going to talk about the lust that we see in verse 16, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. So before we really dive into to verse 16, what is lust? The definition of lust, according to Merriam-Webster's, is to long after, to desire something. So when we talk about the lust of the flesh, we'll read these verses in a second, but these things in these verses are stuff that people desire. It makes them feel good in the flesh. It makes your body feel good, so that's why they desire them. Galatians chapter 5, starting in verse 19. "Now the works of the flesh are manifest, which are these: adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lasciviousness, idolatry, witchcraft, hatred, variance, emulations, wrath, strife, seditions, heresies, envyings, murders, drunkenness, revelings, and such like, of which I tell you before, as I have also told you in time past, that they which do such things shall not inherit the kingdom of God." So we see that these things right here is what God does not accept. They're not acceptable to God. They're not right. We know that you can't just go out and kill somebody and get away with it. That's not right. And we know that there's going to be punishment for these things if we continually do them and do not repent of them. And looking at these verses, a lot of these, I don't know how you can lust after wanting to kill somebody. That just blows my mind. But there are people that lust after killing people, and they struggle with that temptation. And talking to some people in school, in high school, it came to me that the crazy things that can go on in the world, the people actually lust after. I was talking to a kid that was addicted to prescription painkillers. He's addicted to hydrocodone specifically. And I asked him, "Why do you do all this? Why is it so fun?" And he said, "Well, it makes me feel good. And it makes me feel high." And I said, "Well, why do you like that?" He's like, "It makes me feel good. Why not like it?" So, I mean, some of these things we're not gonna fully understand, because it's just, for me, it's over my head. I could never imagine being addicted to something like that. But some people do struggle with that. Now, there are many instances in the Bible that we could go back to and look at lust of the flesh, but I want to go back to the story of Adam and Eve and look where Eve was tempted in this aspect. In Genesis chapter 3 and verse 6, it says, "When the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was pleasant to the eyes, and the tree to be desired to make one wise, she took of the fruit thereof, and did eat, and gave also unto her husband with her, and he did eat." So I think that we're pretty familiar with this story. We know that Adam and Eve were in the garden. They were hungry, they were naked, and they were afraid. And we know that the serpent comes along and says, you know, "God said, don't eat of this tree, but you can have this one, but scratch that. That tree looks good and you're hungry. It's going to taste good and it's going to be good for your flesh." So what can we do in times of temptation? A big thing for me was prayer. Matthew chapter 26 verse 41, "Watch and pray that ye enter not into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak." You know, the part about the flesh is weak is very true in today's society. You know, we as Christians, especially young people, we're pushed with the idea that drugs are okay, premarital sex is okay, because it's, after all what you want, that's what you need to do. And I'm here to tell you that that's not how it works. That's not how God works. First John chapter 5, verse 14, and this is the confidence that we have in him, that if we ask anything according to his will, he heareth us. When I was younger, probably 7 or 8, I was raised on the farm, I was of that background, and I would pray to God that I could have a big lifted diesel truck. And as stupid as that sounds, I did it on a daily basis, every night before I went to bed. And looking back, I mean, it's kind of funny, but it's ridiculous looking back at it now. God doesn't care if we have a big lifted diesel truck. That's not going to help us get to heaven. We need to pray for stuff that's according to his will. We need to pray for the strength to overcome temptations, to be the shining light, and stuff of that nature. Number two, lust of the eyes. this is a big thing that I think is really overlooked. Without our eyes, you know, we lose a lot of things that we can do, a lot of things that we can see, obviously. But, you know, we have our cell phones, and cell phones can be a great thing, don't get me wrong, but a couple years ago, some girls in my school decided for some odd reason to send some pictures out that they shouldn't have. And on Snapchat, kids, I know you're big into Snapchat, and you think that, well, it goes away. It never goes away. And these girls got busted and ended up getting expelled from school because they sent a couple pictures. And that was, I guess they lusted for the boys to lust after them through their eyes. And I never understood that, but cell phones can be a big problem. They can be a great tool, but they can also be a big problem. Going back to the story of Adam and Eve, it says, and it was pleasant to the eyes. So we know that that tree must have looked good to Eve. And the serpent knew that. He knew that, you know, I can go and exploit this weakness right now and get Eve to go look at that tree. Because after all, it looked good. And if it looks good, it must taste good. And during times of temptation, James chapter 1 and verse 12, blessed is the man that endureth temptation, for when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord has promised to him that love him. And for a long time, I really struggled with this verse. In reading it, it says, blessed is the man that endureth temptation. And I had a big misinterpretation of that word, endured. You know, I thought that, you know, you have temptations in your life, obviously, and you go through them. You really try not to do them. But if you do it, that's all right. You tried. Just move on to your next part of your life. Well, that's wrong. God said, if you endure temptation, endures mean you overcome it. You do not commit it. You endure that temptation, you overcome it, and you don't commit the sin that comes of it. And that's when he promises the crown of life to us. And then we're going to talk about the pride of life, and this has to do kind of more on my personal level, and I'm not a big fan of talking about myself, my story, but I'm going to throw myself under the bus here for a minute. Many of you know I was pretty big into football when I got to my junior year of high school. Played inside linebacker. Off season came around. I was lifting weights every day, twice a day, getting really big, really strong, and played through junior year of high school, and did pretty well, kind of average. Got moved up to varsity, and my head started growing a little bit. And I started thinking, man, I'm doing really good. I'm doing this all for myself. So senior year, off season comes around, start lifting weights again, start getting really big, and start getting some calls from some colleges, some small colleges, interested in me coming to visit, coming to play football. And so football season rolled around, started playing really good, got the starting position after a couple weeks, and it just started snowballing after that. You know, I started getting defensive player of the game, started getting player of the game, and it just really snowballed, and my head grew. I don't know how I got my helmet on after a couple games because my head was so big, but it just snowballed and snowballed, and I thought to myself, you know, I'm doing really good. This is me. This is all about me. I'm doing this for myself. And I think it was week 5. I know the school we play, it's Skyline. This is me in the, I think, two plays before my life changed, I'll just say that. I was having a pretty good game. We had the other inside linebacker get hurt, so kind of flipping around positions. So I was playing a little bit out of my comfort zone, playing a different position, but we were playing the game still in the game. And, I kind of forgot to add this part. I was the master of trash talk in football. No doubt about it. I was 5'7", 200 pounds. If I couldn't get you on the field, I was going to get in your head and I was going to beat you that way. And most of the time I did. And, with trash talk comes consequences. I'll just put it that way. And that night I ended up with a broken ankle and torn ligaments in my ankle. And, I'll just be honest with you. That was a rough couple of days for me. And, spent a lot of time thinking about, you know, where I was in life and why me. You know, I was doing so good and God just had to do this to me. And, I really struggled with finding myself at that moment. And luckily through help with other people in the church there at Dallas and through study of the Bible, I kind of come to realize that I was not on the right path and I needed to change. And I'm thankful to God every day that play happened. I got cheap shotted after the play and my ankle got broken. So that just goes to show you that pride can swallow you up. And one second you can be playing football or doing whatever you like, and then you can be sitting there on that hospital bed ready to go back for surgery and just a blink of an eye. So now that we're done with that, luckily, we can get back to the Bible. Psalms chapter 10 and verse 4, the wicked through the pride of his countenance will not seek after God. God is not in all of his thoughts. You know, I think back to those times where I was in football and I was doing this stuff for me, and I thought, you know, I'm doing really good. I was not thinking about God. You know, there were multiple times where we had practice past, like going to church a little bit, and people would say, why weren't you at church? I had football practice. And that's, God wasn't in my thoughts. God was not in the forefront of my mind. Going back to Adam and Eve, it says in the tree to be desired to make one wise. You know, the serpent exploited again another weakness in Eve, and he knew that. And he said, you know, if you eat of that tree, you're going to be made wise. You're going to become smart from eating that tree. Here we have a pretty popular parable, I would say, one that we're all pretty familiar with. We'll read it anyways. Parable of the sower in Luke chapter 8. Starting in verse 11, it says, now the parable is this. The seed is the word of God. Those by the wayside are they that hear. Then cometh the devil and taketh away the word out of their hearts, lest they should believe and be saved. They on the rock are they, which when they hear, receive the word with joy, and these have no root, which for a while believe, and in time of temptation fall away. And that which fell among the thorns are they, which when they have heard, go forth and are choked with the cares and riches and pleasures of this life, and bring no fruit to perfection. But that on the good ground are they which in an honest and good heart, having heard the word, keep it and bring forth fruit with patience. So I don't think that it's really necessary to break it all down, because I believe we understand, you know, you come to church, and if you're not into church, why are you here? I mean, you can come to church till you're blue in the face, but if you don't apply what's taught, what the Bible teaches, what's God's will for us, then what's the point? And going back to verse 15 in the bottom part of that passage, we know that if we apply those things to our life, we study them out, we seek to execute as well as we can what God has in store for us, then we're going to bring forth fruit. Some symptoms of pride that I found in my life, and maybe you're finding in yours, is first would be a harsh spirit. You know, whenever people around me would do wrong, I would really just grit my teeth at them, like, what are you doing? And I would say, you know, you're doing that, but I'm not doing that. I'm good. And I was doing that out of frustration, out of judgment for them. And that's not right at all. Second, being superficial. You know, when pride lives in our hearts, we're far more concerned with what others view us as than what God looks at us as. And we need to really dig down deep and look at the reality of our hearts. Pride's probably the hardest thing to diagnose in our lives today. And we need to grit down and really, really look in our hearts and see how the condition of our hearts. Number three, being desperate for attention. I'm ashamed to tell you that I spent a lot of time in the mirror because I was filling out my shirts, and really, I would go in the locker room before school, go do some push-ups to make sure my arms were swelled up for class so the girls would think they would look big. And that, again, is ridiculous, but that's part of the whole pride thing. You really care what people think, the way they look at you. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't care what you look like, but when it becomes a ruler in your life, that's when it becomes wrong. And number four, neglecting others. You know, I was not concerned with the well-being of my teammates, not concerned for the well-being of the church. I was just concerned about myself and the condition of myself when I was caught up in pride. You know, pride has kept many people from obeying the gospel, and I believe there's many examples of that in today's world. And, you know, admitting your sin and acknowledging that is not an easy thing to do for anyone, and especially not for prideful people. Matthew chapter 4, starting in verse 1, we know that Jesus was tempted in a lot of ways. We're going to read this passage here. Matthew chapter 4, starting in verse 1 says, "Then Jesus was led up of the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted of the devil. And when he had fasted 40 days and 40 nights, he was afterward and hungered. And when the tempter came to him, he said, 'If thou be the Son of God, command that these stones be made bread.' But he answered and said, 'It is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of God.' Then the devil taketh him up into the holy city and setteth him on the pinnacle of the temple, and saith unto him, 'If thou be the Son of God, cast thyself down, for it is written, he shall give his angels charge concerning thee, and in their hands they shall bear thee up, lest at any time thou dash thy foot against a stone.' Jesus said unto him, 'It is written again, thou shalt not tempt the Lord thy God.' Again, the devil taketh him up into an exceeding high mountain, and showeth him all the kingdoms of the world, and the glory of them. And he said unto him, 'All these things will I give thee, if thou wilt fall down and worship me.' Then saith Jesus unto him, 'Get thee hence, Satan, for it is written, thou shalt worship the Lord thy God, and him only shalt thou serve.' Then the devil leaveth him, and behold, angels came and ministered unto him." So when I talk to especially younger people about their problems with temptation and their problems with life going throughout middle school and high school, they say, you know, no one's ever been where I'm at. No one understands what I'm going through. And in some cases, maybe people don't understand what you're going through, but I can tell you that Jesus was tempted, as we just read here. And there's no doubt that he got through it. We read in the Bible that he was yet sinless after being tempted. Hebrews chapter 4, starting in verse 14, says, "Seeing then that we have a great high priest that is passed into the heavens, Jesus the Son of God, let us hold fast our profession. For we have not an high priest which cannot be touched with the feeling of our infirmities, but was in all points tempted like as we are, yet without sin. Let us therefore come boldly unto the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need." So Jesus has gone and set no greater example than we can ever find for us that we can look to. And he went through he was tempted just like we are, as we read. But he did it without sin. He overcame that temptation. He endured that temptation, as we talked about. John chapter 16, we'll start in verse 25, says, "These things have I spoken unto you in Proverbs, but the time cometh when I shall no more speak unto you in Proverbs, but I shall show you plainly of the Father. At the day ye shall ask in my name, and I say not unto you that I will pray the Father for you. For the Father himself loveth you, because ye have loved me, and have believed that I came out from God. I came forth from the Father, and am come into the world again. I leave the world and go to the Father." His disciples said unto him, "Lo, now speakest thou plainly, and speakest no proverb. Now are we sure that thou knowest all things, and needest not that any man should ask thee. By this we believe that thou camest forth from God." Jesus answered them, "Do ye now believe? Behold, the hour cometh, yea, is now come, that ye shall be scattered every man to his own, and shall leave me alone. And yet I am not alone, because the Father is with me. These things have I spoken unto you, that in me ye might have peace. In the world ye shall have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world." Now this verse really, or the latter part of this passage that we just read in John 16, really helped me in the dark days, I guess you could say. Knowing that God's come before me, he's set an example, he's overcome it, and that I can have peace through that. And he says plainly that we're going to have problems in this world. He knew we were going to have problems. But in those problems, rejoice and be glad that you have a way to escape. 1 Corinthians 10 and 13, there hath no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that ye are able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape, that ye may be able to bear it. So we read here that plainly, God's going to give us a way to escape. So now let's talk about some ways we can escape. Number one, be in Christ. Galatians 3:27, for as many of you as been baptized into Christ have put on Christ. If you look around here in this audience, and just looking in this audience, it's a small portion of the whole church. You know, you have all these great people in here that are willing to help you, more than willing to help you, and I know they love you with all their heart because they're concerned for your soul and they're concerned for your well-being. Number two, remember God's promises. 1 Peter 3 and 9, not rendering evil for evil or railing for railing, but contrawise blessing, knowing that ye are thereunto called, that ye should inherit a blessing. You know, we need to remember what we're here for on this earth. We're not here to gain all the wealth and all the material things that we can. We're here to serve God, and we're here to spread the gospel. Number three, use the word. James 4 and 7, submit yourselves therefore to God. Resist the devil and he will flee from you. You know, there's nothing wrong with just getting out of that situation that you're in. I can tell you many times, I've gotten out of situations that I know I shouldn't have been in. And I've just luckily been able to get out of there. And we'll talk about that here. Physically flee, number four. Genesis chapter 39 and verse 11. And it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business. And there was none of the men of the house there within. And she caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. And he left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out. So we know that in this situation, it was kind of hairy for Joseph, and he got out of it luckily. He just plain got out of there. He ran. And there's many times in my high school career, I guess you could say, that I had to get out of there because stuff was going on that I did not want to be a part of that was not right. And luckily, my parents were really helpful in that they would let me kind of blame them. And I did that a lot. And they even went to as far to get a drug test, put it in the counter, or not the counter, the cabinet, to say I had a drug test waiting at home. And one night I got home and they drug tested me just so I could say I'd been drug tested. And drug test came back negative, if you were wondering. Didn't fail the drug test, but I was able to tell my friends, you know, they could say, let's go smoke dope. Let's go have a good time at this party. And I say, you know what? I've got a drug test waiting at home, and my parents, they're not joking about that. And I wasn't lying about it. I really did have a drug test waiting at home for me. So that was a way that I could get out of things. And I'm glad that they allowed me to do that.